Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Rain on Your Parade with JL Covan. I am JL Covan. I'm here, as always, with my producer, Mike. Mike, how are you?
Hello, JL. Hello. What are we going to call this audience? I was going to call them rainheads. That sucks, though.
Raindrops.
Raindrops. That's good.
Thank you. Well, I know. That's what I do. Also, you didn't answer my question. I said, how are you? Not, can you say hello to the audience? That's my job. Thanks. Okay, well, come back to me. Thank you. We'll try this again next week. But we're going to talk. I was at, I don't know if you can, if you're seeing the video of this, you know that I'm wearing a bright blue Guns N' Roses t-shirt. I was at a Guns N' Roses concert last night. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. That and also just the state of music and rock and roll. And there go the youth clicking off the podcast. He called it rock and roll. Gross.
It also didn't help that you called them youth. The youth.
Well, no, I leave off Hitler. I shorten it to just youth.
Got it.
So they know what I'm talking about.
Now that's
edited. And when I run for office in 10 years, they're like, here he is giving the white power sign. And because of all the self-hating people in like Trump world who are like people of color who join like supremacist groups. Like Proud Boys had like a Latin leader. It's like now being like, no, but I'm half black won't be a defense. They're like, no, they have those now. They have biracial white supremacists.
Right.
So you're not safe, JL. Couple of announcements up top. Shows coming up. I think that's safe to say. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, September 15th and 16th. Out west on the West Coast. Yeah, showing my age. How about that? Some early 90s hand gestures. I will be in, Pittsburgh is not really out west. It's west from here, but
west Pittsburgh, from here?
Yeah. Pittsburgh, October 11th at City Winery, and then Flappers October 20th in Burbank, California for two shows. So get tickets to those now. I always like how my audience, they always send me those nice positive messages. Like I'm going to try to make it. And then I say, well, I'm going to try to continue to have a career. That's how that works. And it's directly proportional. The more effort you make in actually purchasing tickets, the more I can continue to do comedy. My new special album version, Half Blackface, should be out. It comes out. It'll be out by the time this episode goes up. So if you're just hearing me for the first time, be sure to go stream that or please purchase it. And my other special from this year, Tall Boy, is free on YouTube. So I think that's enough. I have a Patreon. I never promote that, but it's actually, I just hit a new high in subscribers to that. So that's good. I'm doing something right, I guess, for a few people.
You don't promote that, huh?
No, now I am.
Okay.
I haven't promoted here.
I promote it
relentlessly everywhere else.
Okay. Got it.
I have it tattooed on my back. Patreon.com/JL Covan. A lot of good stuff there, folks, including Mike. Have you ever been to Universal Studios?
In Orlando, Florida?
Yes.
I sure have, many times.
Now, you're too young for this. You represent the youth, as we call them. Not the Hitler youth there. No,
the youth wouldn't agree, but okay.
Your youth to me, which is the only reason why you deal with me. It's why Joe Biden still works with Dianne Feinstein.
He's right.
Like, you make me look young, you cadaver. That's why I'm here. It's like, JL makes me feel young. Why? Because he's got such a youthful spirit? No, because when I look at him, I go, I'm younger than him.
Yeah.
By a lot. I went to Universal Studios with my mom for the first time when I was 12, 6'4" at the time. And, that's a height joke. He didn't laugh. And I guess none of the listeners did either. But I went to Universal Studios and they had this thing where you could get a videotape made. That's a download.
Oh, yes.
A download.
You've told me this story, but for the audience. Yes.
Well, so it was like a fake Star Trek episode. They had gotten the actors from Star Trek to sort of film scenes, and then they green screen you into various scenes and give you cue cards for the dialogue. It was only like $30 for like a 12-minute pretty good movie for 1992.
Well, I was going to say it was $40 for 1978, but... Hey,
I didn't get that.
Because you're old.
Oh, I was not born in 1970. I was not around in 1978. I was just
all right.
I was just a tall drop of semen. What if that's how it worked? Like if a particularly long string of cum,
your dad felt pain.
That's how you get tall. It's still
he's gonna be just one unbroken
thread of jizz. Jeez, this guy's gonna be a monster. I hope he's good at basketball and doesn't decide to go for a career in the arts. But we go to Universal Studios. My mom does this with me, and I recently was getting stuff from her apartment as we're clearing it out. That's a morbid sort of enterprise. You know, my mom is 79. She's in fine health, but she's 79. So it's like there's this unspoken thing of like clear stuff out of the house. So, you know, if I die, it's not too much of a big deal.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I cleared out was the tape from 1992. Mm. So I got it digitized and it looks great and it's hugely embarrassing and it's on my Patreon. And that actually led to the single biggest day, other than when I launched a Patreon, it was like the biggest single new members day. So they want to see me maybe my fans just like have always wished they could masturbate to a 13-year-old version of me or a 12-year-old version of me. And you know what? That's why we do it.
That is why. Yes, that's right.
Content is content. As I like to paraphrase Michael Jordan, perverts who wish you were a kid buy Nikes too. So, but that's on the Patreon. And I want to talk about one thing with you, Mike, as a fellow sort of snack aficionado.
Yes. Snack aficionado. That's a very kind way to put it.
Yeah, that's going to be the spinoff podcast when we start doing like bonus content just about snacks. About like snacks, today, we're going to eat 900 types of cookies.
Yeah.
But before we get to the rock and the concert and all that, Crumbs Cupcakes. I brought this up before. And for those of you maybe not from New York or just don't obsess over treats, Crumbs Cupcakes, for my money, which they got a lot of, the best cupcake place in the history of the world, and definitely New York City.
I'm when you said that, I was going through my mind to think if there's a place in particular that I can even think of that would possibly rival it, and I don't come up with anything.
Right.
They were like in a class of all alone.
Yeah.
They were so good.
No, I had an ex of mine who is, if anybody wants to know more, my second album, Diamond Maker, the album that literally turned me from a happy-go-lucky impersonator comedian into a jaded mining personal truths for malevolent humor type of comedian. Not a great relationship, but the two things that survived that relationship are my appreciation of Hoegaarden beer.
Okay.
And my appreciation and love, I'll say love, for Crumbs Cupcakes. Now, they closed a few years ago before the pandemic. They couldn't survive because we do this a lot, I think, in America. We make people who aren't fans of things the arbiters of whether those things should exist. And Adam Carolla, once, I remember, I used to be a very avid listener and 10-time guest. And he had talked about like women, like he'd say in fashion or in things like that, the model for what was a hot woman was being dictated too often by women and gay men.
Yeah.
So it was like, that was, you were getting this image of like, it's as Peter said on Family Guy of Cate Blanchett, who is an attractive person, obviously, but he said, I think Cate Blanchett is the most attractive woman on earth because women and gay men tell me that. And that was kind of in a weird way. Whereas like any man will tell you, Salma Hayek, that's, you know, voluptuous.
I could get down with that.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's generally, there's all sorts of things in between or fetishes or things like that. But that's what the average guy is just going to be kind of into.
Just move that mic to your left a little bit, JL. Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Like toward your left shoulder. So this way when you turn. Sorry, audience.
Like this?
Yeah, because you're turning my way.
All right.
There you go.
Are you going to go my way? Anyway, rocks, just another little rock tidbit.
Big tease.
But Crumbs Cupcakes. Okay, so the point is, Crumbs Cupcakes, I think, rose to power in an era where like cute cupcakes were becoming a thing.
Yes, you're right.
Like, hey, Baked by Melissa.
Here's, I know.
Here, do you want to pretend like you like desserts? Yeah. Here's a thimble we call a cupcake. Get 10.
Yeah.
They add up to a third of a Crumbs cupcake. Crumbs cupcake was basically like, let's not fuck around.
Yes, you're right.
Crumbs cupcake was like a woman you're on a date with.
Yeah.
Plunging neckline. You got two drinks in you. And she's like, I don't give a fuck about rules.
Yeah.
I don't eat. Do you want to leave? Right. Crumbs cupcake was a, do you want to leave right now?
It was a whip it out, put it on the table and show
me. Do you
me.
Want a sex Matumbo
yes.
and have a cupcake?
It really was, man. Those cupcakes that they were, cause Baked by Melissa was the other cupcake that came into my mind when I was thinking about this. And it's not like I dislike them, but you're right. The cute cupcake sort of killed the gargantuan. Nothing was more American than the Crumbs cupcake.
It's the way Matt Rife killed my career. Do you want
enemy of the show?
Do you want a crowd work pixie model, or you want a fucking mega man of comedy who's going to destroy everything? I'm just kidding, Matt Rife. Big fans here.
Yeah.
It's just a fun running gag.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I have
so.
Nothing personal against the guy. I mean, do I find his black scent horrifically offensive? Sure. But you know what? What famous entertainer now hasn't done a black dialect?
Join the club.
Yeah,
exactly. Mark Wahlberg, you know.
Matt Rife and the Funky Bunch.
Right.
That's what I call all the black guys who co-signed for him before his specials.
Yes.
Anyway, good guy. I don't know why I said that. I said good guy like he's not. He probably is a good guy.
It's probably fun.
Yeah. So just don't care particularly for his movement.
Yeah. But Crumbs.
Once again. No. Once again, I would just say.
No.
Similar to Crumbs.
similar to
fat people who destroy desserts determining what the best desserts are.
Yeah.
I do feel like people with developed comedy tastes should be the taste makers in comedy, not ditzes in middle America who don't know a hack when they see one.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, cupcakes. But there is a parallel to this. I feel like I'm the Crumbs cupcake. I've often called myself the street donut of comedy. I'm bigger, I'm more flavorful, but I don't have the branding or the backing of a Krispy Kreme or a Dunkin' Donuts. So you walk by the street cart who's given you double the size donut for half the price. And you're like, I want to get a Dunkin' Donuts because I prefer iced coffee with a stale tiny donut. Thank you.
Yeah. And some people have said it's too much. Just like Crumbs.
Yeah. Oh, Crumbs. And okay. So it's Crumbs. Thank you. Great producer extraordinaire. Crumbs. So Crumbs I get introduced to, when I'm like, remember when I told you I used to be ripped?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was during that phase. So I could eat a Crumbs cupcake and be like, ain't no thing.
Yeah.
5 a.m. gym next day. No problem. But then I lost my job. I was single. And I started to just be like, you know what? After lunch, I'll go. There was a Crumbs near where I lived. So I'd say, you know what? Let me get a Crumbs cupcake. But they always sold them to you. And like they had 2 packs or 4 packs.
Yeah, they did.
So I'd be like, well, they did. In honor of Shakur.
As if anybody could eat 4 of those cupcakes.
Well, in honor of Shakur, let me get a 2-pack here. And I would get the Hostess. They had the Hostess, which was like a real cupcake.
Yeah.
But in the mold of a Hostess cupcake, a million times better than a Hostess cupcake. Yeah. But they had so many good flavors. They had a cookie dough. They had an apple crumb.
They had a Reese's one for sure.
They had a Reese's one.
Yeah.
Which even that scared me because I would bang out 2.
Oh,
that's dude. How disgusting I was.
Yeah.
That's, by the way, that was 15 to 1600 calories. That was
JL, it was closer to a cake than a cupcake.
Yes.
To be honest.
Yes. And I started to eat those like 2 a day, like Fredo and waitresses in Vegas.
Yes.
I was banging 2 at a time.
2 at a time.
And then all of a sudden I heard they were in financial trouble and I was not the mogul that I am today. So I couldn't bail them out, although I would have. And they closed. Then they reopened. Some angel investor showed up. They reopened. And you know what they added? Girl Scout cookie cupcakes.
Oh.
I had a Samoa Crumbs cupcake. I came in the store while I was purchasing it. To say nothing of the ecstasy I felt when I ate it. And they teased me because then they closed like 6 months later for good. Crumbs Cupcakes is to me emblematic of our society, which is like, we don't trust experts. Okay. This is so Malcolm Gladwell. You're so lucky to be here, Mike. The Malcolm Gladwell-esque stories I weave to make broader points about society, it's really stunning to be. As Kanye would say, my only regret is I can't be here to watch myself podcast. But we don't trust experts in so many things. With my comedy career, too many people tag jokes. That's why I have a segment at the end of each episode shitting on people for making horrible suggestions to a comedian that they're fans of. So they've already acknowledged my level of skill and expertise, and yet they still think, you know what you need to do? You should do this. Fauci. Look at Fauci. We just lost some people. I'm sorry. But look at Fauci, the disregard for his expertise. And Crumbs Cupcakes, probably the biggest disregard of expertise, because those were the best cupcakes ever. I want a Netflix documentary about them or something. Like, they deserve the documentary treatment.
They really were, man.
They were the best.
I'm just trying, again, I keep trying to think if there's something that could have. There are other cupcakes that, like you mentioned, the Hostess cupcake. That's classic.
Right.
But it's not better.
In its lane.
Yes.
It serves a lane the same way I say Entenmann's chocolate chip cookies.
Right.
Are they the best chocolate chip cookies on the planet? Of course not.
But they are.
But
they're real good.
They're elite.
Yeah.
They play in the supermarket league and they dominate.
Yep. Yep.
They've put up record numbers in the supermarket league.
Yep.
But Crumbs Cupcakes, I just feel like at some point, if we're going to survive as a society, we need to basically say, we're going to let the experts dictate or weigh heavily in terms of their field. And with Crumbs Cupcakes, desserts and lovers of desserts, we lost a champion with Crumbs. I cannot express to you how great, like, it makes me sad that there's no Crumbs.
I know.
Now, it's good for me, but guess what? Dessert is not good for you.
Yeah.
Why let people pick and choose and I get the market. Let the market decide.
Yeah.
But we created this campaign where cupcakes had to be like some sort of cute feminine thing.
Yeah.
And it was like Crumbs Cupcakes were like, do you really like cupcakes?
Yeah.
Or are you a fucking poser? Right? Like, do you like cupcakes, or are you a bitch pretending to like cupcakes?
Yeah.
Because if you want, I love the, oh, they're so good. Oh, they're so, that's a nice little baked by Melissa. How much is that? $900?
Yeah.
Whereas Crumbs was like, $4.
Yeah.
We'll kill you.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I know we got to move on to something, but like, I just felt strongly about that because now I'm back to dieting again. I'm eating fucking walnuts and drinking green tea and just being like, oh, that's nourishing. I'm going to antioxidants. But like, sometimes you just want, when you're, you know.
You want to get fucked up by chocolate.
Do you want oxy or do you want fentanyl?
Yeah, right.
That would have been my marketing campaign for Crumbs. Are you a bitch who needs a prescription or do you want the good shit from China?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So RIP Crumbs, you are missed. I'm thinking, should I get like a crumb? Like, if I were really, if I had like a Jake and Logan Paul commitment to comedy, I would get a tattoo on my shoulder of the cookie dough was the one I got the most.
Yeah.
The cookie dough Crumbs cupcake, and it would say RIP Crumbs in script. Like, I would go to like the hood that specializes in like memorial tattoos and get that on my shoulder.
Well, I actually thought that we could get like the way the NBA, like when Bill Russell dies, you put like a little decal on the side of your jersey.
Wow.
We could get like little shows for the shirts for the show and put a little like Crumbs decal on it for the rest of the year, like a rest in peace.
That's a great idea. So I love that idea.
Find the best.
I have no creative fans and none that really care. Or else I'd throw it to them and say, who wants to work on that?
Yeah.
And they're all like, unsubscribe. So where are we on time? I know it's unprofessional, but I want to make sure we do our breaks properly.
Well, for you, JL, and our fans, we've been recording for 19 minutes and 19 seconds. How you feel, audience? I feel good. How about you?
We have spirit. Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
And okay, so last night I go and I've done the plugs. I've done the tribute to Crumbs. I'm thinking now I'm like just thinking about Crumbs cupcakes.
Yeah.
They are worth dying for is what I'm saying. Like if I had diabetes, I'd be like, man, you live once.
Yeah.
That's one of the, that is like, they rank in like a top five food pleasure for me ever.
Yeah.
So, and had I not gone through a horrific relationship, I would have never really discovered, well, I would have discovered them eventually, but later.
But it would have almost been too late.
Yeah.
Because you only had a certain amount of time with them.
Yeah. It's, wow.
Yeah.
God, we miss you, Crumbs. Anyway, I went to Guns N' Roses last night at MetLife Stadium. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine, for the area it serves, one of the worst stadiums there are.
Oh, I hate MetLife.
Right?
It's beyond, I won't even go anymore.
It's just not a good, it's like,
it's hard to get to.
You have two football teams that play there. All the major artists play there.
Yep.
And it feels like, what are you doing? Like, why is this not? I think who do you like, Jets or Giants?
I'm a Giants fan. Oh my God. I'm a Jets fan. I can't believe I just got the football team that I like wrong.
No, we know that's getting edited out.
It's a long week.
I think the Jets should have made a move to Hudson Yards when that was like a possibility. Yeah. For or so Brooklyn. Many reasons.
Yeah.
You build up a better stadium from scratch. You now
have your own fucking place.
Your own place. Yeah. Your Long Island, all those Long Islanders that love the Jets. Penn Station.
Yep.
Right into Penn Station.
Yep.
There's so many reasons why that would have been a great long-term move. But they play in MetLife. And it's just, you know, I like seeing, it's not that I mind seeing concerts there, but that and Prudential, I feel like they feel like half finished.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And maybe they just are like, who cares? People are going to come to see it regardless. But it just feels half finished. And so I saw Guns N' Roses there last night. And Guns N' Roses, just for new listeners or people who don't pay attention to anything I do but claim to be fans, is my favorite band of all time, favorite rock band of all time. Slash and I are both coveted members of the Biracial Entertainer Hall of Fame. Axl Rose for my money. I think he's my favorite frontman of all time. And I know everybody has to automatically go to that Freddie Mercury. Oh, Freddie Mercury. Mm. And I go, well, just like we discussed with callback, Nikola Jokic possibly having like Asperger's, being like a PED.
Yeah.
Isn't being gay kind of a PED for flamboyant, charismatic frontman?
Yeah.
Right? Like, isn't it already like he's already just peacocking right out of bed in the morning?
Well, it's
peacocking.
It's like all of those guys on Broadway probably could they have been great frontmen? Maybe. The one thing with Freddie Mercury, he's got a little bit of that rock star edge.
You knew of course that he doesn't. No, I'm, you know.
But he also would have been great in like the Music Van or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
The teeth might have been a problem. But the you know, obviously he's a great he's an iconic frontman. I'm not trying to honestly diminish him, but for me, Axl Rose was always my favorite. Like, and I always liked Steven Tyler. I mm-hmm. like guys who use the mic stand. Even Huey Lewis was a big mic stand user.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, they both, but Axl Rose for me, I'll never see him live in his prime, obviously.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to do like a slither last night and I was like, oh no. Oh no.
It doesn't have it anymore.
It wasn't a slither.
Yeah.
It was like a teeter totter to the side.
Yeah.
But you watch the video for Sweet Child of Mine. And that is a man in such command of his body, the mic stand and the mic cord.
Yeah.
Like, he's twirling the mic at one point. He's like bobbing the mic stand back and forth. And then he twirls it. And like right before, where do you go? Wow. He catches the mic. He's like, where do you? And like the Paradise City video, that's him in like arena energy. Yeah. And
you could be
he's the best. I love Guns N' Roses, and I was so happy in 2016 when they got back to like when they decided to tour again. I like those were doesn't matter that I don't have a lot of money. Those are bucket list items because it's my favorite group, and I literally thought they'd never get back together. I loved both shows I went to. I went to Philly and MetLife in 2016. And then I said, I skipped a couple of their more recent shows. And I said, you know what? Let me go again. Because you never know when they won't be together,
yeah,
or when tragedy will befall, or if you'll lose your day job in 3 months and not have the money accessible to buy tickets to concerts you want to go to. Mm-hmm. That was a little autobiographical note there at the end. But so we went and it was a B. And I got to be honest, I got to keep it real with my boys, Guns N' Roses. They went 3 hours, which, while impressive, I don't have it like that anymore. First of all, I had to watch an entire Pretenders concert before.
Oh, they opened?
The Pretenders opened for them.
Really?
But like an hour and 20 minute set, which is cool.
They're opening for them. That's crazy.
But like my knees, feet, and ass don't have it like that anymore for a 5:45 to 11:15 night.
Yeah.
I don't have it anymore. Yeah. I mean, I don't have it now. I don't know if I ever told you this. I used to be really jacked.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And then I'll do tantric concerts with Sting. We'll just fucking never come for 20 hours while he plays Fields of Gold nonstop.
Yeah, yeah.
But deep cut, guys, not really a deep cut. Okay, fans? Not a deep cut. That's actually, there was a music video. It's a good song.
Yeah.
But I know you want to know, well, you should have said Every Breath You Take. Well, you're a fucking hack.
Yeah.
Fan who just thought that. But it was a B. Because instrumentally it was good. Axl in moments was good. And I was saying to you before the show, Axl to me is more in the, you got to stay fit. Your voice was fine in parts, but I don't think it's like the conditioning didn't feel, and it was, I think, the fourth show on the tour. Maybe he's going to get his wind, but I feel
they just started.
I think it's, I can't read the back of my t-shirt, but it's, I think it was the fourth show on the tour.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm missing them in Seattle by a day. Hmm. When I go out there. But the only guy who's really kept himself in shape, Duff McKagan, the bass player, is like in phenomenal shape.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember reading
Slash doesn't look like he's in shape anymore.
Slash, I'm going to make a comparison here. I was in a bar in 2006, and this was, I was 2009. Mm-hmm. This is like, I'm single, eating crumbs, like career going nowhere, JL. For real. So I'm like, this is the first time I'm still lifting weights, but I'm not doing cardio. I'm not being disciplined.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and by the way, speaking of discipline, for all you fans out there, you got to know, this is just a temporary kind of thing we're doing with the podcast. We're eventually going to bring Alpha Male Bro podcasters in here to tell you all the ways to succeed. You got to remind them.
Right.
Like the porn stars are coming. They're going to tell you,
you
know, all about. Like what it's like.
Yeah.
What it's like doing porn. We're going to have
what
all
your
those
audience
things.
Wants.
Yeah. That's, you know, you go alpha bros.
Yeah.
Porn stars discussing dick. This is what's hot on TikTok and on Instagram. This is what you got to do. But we're just doing this for now. What was I talking about?
Guns N' Roses Slash. Yeah.
Slash. Well, in 2009, I want to say I was in a bar with my best friend, and Michael Strahan was in the bar. Giants legend.
Yeah.
Michael Strahan, or daytime talk show legend.
Yes.
To some of you. I have an old fan base.
Yes.
Women, elderly women love me. I was bigger than Michael Strahan. Not stronger, not more fit, obviously, but that bothered my friend. Like to him, Michael Strahan, it's like, this is one of my favorite Giants.
Yeah.
On my favorite football team. And Strahan was actually got leaner in his late in his career.
Of course.
So he was like, he was going for speed as much as he was going for power, but jacked. But like,
still jacked.
But like 6'3 and kind of like, you know, kind of Chris Hemsworth in a non-Thor action movie build.
Yeah.
But if you're going for sheer volume, 6'7, 300 loaded up on bench press and crumbs is going to just look bigger. And the best thing about that was I saw the women in the bar looking at me. Now, I'm in an unattractive phase at that point.
Yeah.
But the women saw me next to Michael Strahan and were just like, is he the long snapper? Will I be good if I suck his dick?
That's Michael Strahan's bodyguard.
Will I be on the Giants if he fucks me? And so that's how I feel looking at Slash. Slash looks tiny up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want slight, like, that's why James Hetfield of Metallica. I like Metallica. I'm not like Metallica. Oh my God. I've seen them once, I think, in concert, but I like Metallica. Definitely. And James Hetfield's like 6'3", 6'4". Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, yes, rock. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like
iconic rock voice. Yes.
But for that type of music, it's like, I like the fact that he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Like that makes it more like, oh man, Hetfield. Like if a fan of some 5'11 little guy like yourself showed up and
I didn't think of it that way, but okay.
That's a callback to no. Mike is a strong 6 feet tall.
I'm 5'11", but I didn't think 5'11 was a small man.
No, it's not. But I'm saying if you're a fan, if you're a diehard fan of Metallica and you're like 5'10", and you bump into James Hetfield, you're like, this is a man as big as the music.
Yeah, right.
Whereas Slash is like tiny. He looks tiny to me. Iconic look, iconic player, but it's just like when I see him on stage, I'm like, look at that old guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh boy. It's just a little... It's a little like, oh,
yeah,
there goes a little Slash running around the stage. Whereas Duff McKagan is more of a Hetfield, like tall, kind of muscular. And Axl Rose is, he looks like Harry Styles' mom.
Ugh.
That's what I think he looks like.
I see that. I mean, I get it. It's weird, man. This is the thing. My zag on this was because you enjoyed yourself, right? You had a good time.
I did. It was, but I have to admit, it was like between Axel's diminished fitness, the length of the show. I would have preferred Axel give me 150.
Yeah.
Of just, you know,
rocking it,
just all in. And it's not. I'm not saying anybody was given less than 100% effort, but it was like a lot of break, like a lot of guitar solos for changes and probably like some hot water with lemon or whatever he needs for his voice. But no, I enjoy, but I'll get to the music was, I have to admit, I don't know if the people around me diminished my enjoyment of it. Like if they, we'll get to that in a second, but you have a zag.
My zag is just that as a fan of rock music, rock and roll sort of music that really isn't as popular in the mainstream now as it was really before my time. I feel like my window to have seen these bands that I really like is over. It's closed. And I got to see a lot of them when I saw Prince like well before he passed. I saw, you know, I've seen Springsteen a bunch of times in Jersey, especially like I've seen a lot of the acts that I really wanted to see. And now I feel like a lot of these bands that I would have liked to have seen, like the Rolling Stones, will still tour. And I've just kind of come to accept that I didn't see them in 1972, which is what I really would have wanted to see them.
Right.
And it's just kind of over.
Like, I take 1981. I'll take me some Stop Me Up.
Yeah.
Just.
But now, but now it's just kind of like, they're too old, man. Like I can't, even if they're still pretty good, it's just not the experience that I want. They don't represent rock and roll, really represents like it's a youthful sound. It's a youthful experience. And these guys now are no longer even close to that. So it just doesn't.
They're not youth.
They are not youth, my friend. Well, let me tell you.
I agree with you. And see the Rolling Stones, I love listening to their music, but I remember when I saw that Martin Scorsese did a documentary on them in like 05 China or Light. Something. Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it and going, I don't like the way they sound live that much.
No.
So I was like, if you're somebody who's seen them your whole life and you, it's a tradition like that you go, yeah, keep going. That's why they keep selling out. You just want to be part of the experience. But I'm like, I don't like AC/DC is a good example of a band that I thought I would see them today if they were still able to. They lost their bass player to death.
Yeah.
And,
and you were looking for the thing.
And then and Brian Johnson, I think, is losing his hearing. Like the Bradley Cooper shit in A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
Tinnitus, what it's called? Yeah. But AC/DC I saw in 2000 and in 2009. Not exactly like this isn't 1984.
But I remember the 2009. I had friends that went and they were like, it was the coolest.
It fucking rocked.
Was that when it rained?
I don't remember. I was in the garden. I saw it at the garden.
Okay. My friends went to see them at MetLife and they were like, dude, it was a hurricane outside and they played for like 3 hours. They called the concert Hurricane AC/DC and they said it was awesome. And I didn't go. I was like, I like AC/DC, whatever, but I don't like them that much. And I regretted it to this day. Right. I regret it.
Yeah.
Fuck. I could have seen them and it would have been awesome.
Yeah. AC/DC is the perfect example. Like 2009 is 29 years after Back in Black.
Yeah.
A good enough time where there could be some real drop off.
Yeah.
None. Mm-hmm. Sounds like the album. And on that album, they had a new album then called Black Ice. Mm-hmm. It was an okay album, but it had the lead song was called Rock and Roll Train, because every AC/DC song has to have the name Rock in it. Rock and Roll Train was the opener for the concert. Yeah. And I'm sad they're basically done.
Yeah.
Because that, I believe it was that good a song and that AC/DC-ish enough, it would have been their lead song for every concert.
Yeah.
Like it belonged in that like greatest hits level.
Yeah.
So like that's an example of a group where it's like you might have thought they were old, but they sold well. They toured great because you were always going to get a good product. Like it was always going to be what you wanted as a young listener, as an old listener.
And dude, I think there's something about bands like that kind of like do short, fast, hard rock songs that age better than like you couldn't get me to see the Grateful Dead with five guns pointed at me.
I saw Fish a couple of weeks ago.
Did you really?
My friend, it was, I wrote up a funny thing on my website. Go check it out, everybody. Because my friend has been like a big Fish fan. He's been to, I think he told me 74 Fish concerts. And so he had tickets and I was like, yeah, I see my buddy like three times a year. I'll go. And he had good, like comfortable seats up in like the walkway. So it was like chill. It wasn't terrible, but it was like, this ain't my thing, but it wasn't terrible. Like I couldn't lie to people and be like, it was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a group that they will always sell out because they have such a high rate of return on their fan to fan engagement level.
Yeah.
But AC/DC, I've seen a lot of older acts, and I think it started when I took Laura on like her first birthday when we were dating.
Yeah.
To Chris Cornell at the Beacon.
Sure. Rest in peace.
Yeah. And I had bought he had like a solo album coming out, and she liked him because she liked his voice and because she thought he was extremely attractive.
Of course. Yes. Every woman.
It was like Mediterranean Jesus age. Christ with the power vocals.
Yeah.
And I nearly forgot my broken heart. And I bought his solo album because I was like, well, I'm going to see the concert. And I like some Soundgarden, and I really liked Audioslave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I listened to the album, and I was like, this motherfucker is like a poet.
Yeah.
But it's all depressing. Like he has a song on that album. It was called, I forget the name of the album, but like the title track was like the only song I hated.
Yeah.
And there was a song Before We Disappear. It's the saddest, one of the saddest and greatest love songs because it's clearly to his wife.
Yeah.
And it's about like taking advantage of like the time we have.
Who was he married? It wasn't Gwyneth Paltrow, was it?
No. Just some chick.
Oh, okay.
Widow. She's now a widow.
Yeah.
Respect. But it was like the tone of the song was just this like cosmic awareness of how insignificant we are. And it's like, what a depressing but poetic way to discuss love.
Yeah.
Because you're basically saying we have to take advantage of the time we have because, you know, eventually we'll be not like so quickly we'll be nothing.
Yeah.
And a lot of his songs were depressing, but beautiful. And he had a great voice. And we saw him perform and he killed himself like 6 months later. Ugh. I don't know if it was Laura's fault, but, you know. But it made me reassess, like, I need to see these artists, or like a year later, but we need to reassess the, like, Tom Petty, I still regret. His tickets were a little too expensive. He was in that second tier of like,
maybe I like next him,
time.
But yeah, right.
Maybe next time. Now, had I known it would be like, you know, his final tour, of course I would have got, because I wanted to see him, but it was like, it was expensive.
Yeah.
And so then I just started seeing all these different people of all different types of music, especially like older acts. And this has nothing to do with rock though, but Guns N' Roses, I can't help but have that in my mind where I'm like, well, these guys live hard. You never know. Are you going to find out Axl Rose passed away or Slash was in a car? In all seriousness.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put this out there, but like Chris Cornell's death, he wasn't like my guy, but I had grown very late in his career, unknowingly that it would be late in his career, of a great appreciation for him. And then he died.
Right.
So then I was like, oh no, like now you have to carpe artist.
Right. Yeah. Well, especially because Cornell's a little bit after that era, but Guns N' Roses is of the Behind the Music era.
Yes.
They're that era where it's just like you read about some of the stuff that they did. I think it was in the Behind the Music. They were just talking about like at their peak, Slash was just getting like head at a bar at the stool, hammered. He's like on heroin, and somebody was just like, some woman was just like sucking his dick at a bar, like on the strip in LA. Like, it's just kind of crazy how reckless they were.
I had thoughts last night. I was like, do you think Slash has ever had just two person sex? Like, while I was watching
ever the concert, in his
I was
life?
Like, does he ever just have sex with one person? Like, do you know, like, it's just like the rock lifestyle. And I think, you know, whenever somebody complains about like hip hop people getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's like, well, guess what? It is rap that took the mantle that, not musically, culturally, they carried on the rock star lifestyle.
1000%.
It was black and brown people, yes. But it was the rock became something else and then started to like fade.
Yes.
And rap, at least as a cultural thing, took the edgy drugs, women, like now it might have offended people who were like, white fellas. Yeah. It was, you know, it's when people burn a CVS down and they're black, it's a riot. When white people destroy the Capitol, it's tourism. It was the same kind of dynamic. The rock star lifestyle is the rock star lifestyle.
Yeah. It's like handed off from Motley Crue to Jay-Z, basically. Yeah. You know,
I'm big. Yeah. From girls, girls, girls to big pimping.
Yeah.
And I think we need to take a break on that clever note. We'll be right back with more rock talk with Mike and the JL. And we're back to Rain on Your Parade, continuing our rock and roll talk. I'm DJ JL with my man, Mikey Mike.
And I'm the Wiz.
No, the Wiz is used too much, man. That's hacky. That is hacky.
Oh, excuse me.
Take that shit to a Matt Rife concert. Anyway, God. Too much.
Catching more strays.
Too much?
Not too much. We're leaving it in.
Okay. Well, all right. And that's how JL got a bump and then his career destroyed.
If you're going to make the enemy, make the enemy.
You know what? You're right.
I know.
You're right. Guess what? I'll just start doing WWE promos. Guess what, Matt Rife? You think you're jacked? You better look at pictures of me when I was 28. I would have snapped you like a Slim Jim. Improv, Friday night, pay-per-view, crowd work versus actual written material, brother. You bring old bitches who like to fuck young dudes, and I'll bring a bunch of old grandmas that subscribe to Patreon.
And we're gonna get it on.
God, that tag ruined it, Mike. I'm sorry. It felt perfect.
All right, move it along here, JL.
Okay, go. Sorry about that. Rock music. I think it's, would you say rock music is dead?
Yeah,
it's dead.
Okay, I can't. Dead. I mean, the closest thing that I can think of is that there are sort of like indie bands and music that I like. There's definitely indie bands that I like, but it's not the same sort of, it's not like rock music.
Right.
As much. And that's the thing with, I'm split on whether and how much of it I really like. I'm in this weird camp with a lot of these bands, especially from the 80s, where even Kiss. I love Kiss, but they suck. But they rock. They suck, but they rock. So it's this weird thing where it's like, I don't think they're a great band. Like they're not the Beatles, you know? But when I watch old YouTube videos of Kiss doing like, I Stole Your Love, I'm like charged up and it rocks. So it's this weird thing where it's like, I think a lot of the indie bands that are around now are better musicians than a lot of these guys. But right. There's just something about the energy of these rock bands, the arena aspect of it, that just doesn't really exist anymore. Those guys now, as we were talking off mic, there's really a lot more hip hop guys that are kind of like the big energy. They have the bigger hits. Like the indie bands don't have giant hits like Paradise City or something like that, you know? But if you go see, you know, 50 Cent, and you hear it in the club, it's like, this is every person in the arena knows the words. It's a ton of people. It's a different experience.
You can find me in the club.
You can find me in the club.
To me, the last perform, like I can't point to the day rock died.
Yeah.
But I remember feeling such gratitude when I saw it. And it's already like a decade old. That's what's so scary. It feels more recent, but I saw the Foo Fighters performing Walk on the Grammys. And they won, I think, in 2012 or 2013, if my memory serves me. Maybe it was a year or two later, but I think it was around then.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the rock category, and I'm hearing almost no rock on the Grammys. And then they get up there and do Walk. And I was like, this is rock.
Yes.
This is rock. This is, there's no other. They have some like lighter stuff, but they are actually playing rock. And I thought to myself, that was like the last time I think I heard a fucking rock song on the Grammys was Walk by the Foo Fighters. Now, I'm sure I'm wrong, but like that's the last thing that stands out to me as like a current rock song.
You could say it's kind of like the other bands that are kind of in the arena are like the Killers, the Black Keys are rock, I would say.
Yeah.
But and I mean Imagine Dragons is the biggest rock band right now,
and
but
there's,
they're
to
not,
me there's too much not, synth
yeah,
and
yeah.
other things. They are closer to electro. Now, you could say they are an offshoot of like their progeny of rock, but they are not rock.
And you could say they suck because I think they do, but like they I agree with you. I don't consider them a rock band.
Some of their music was good for like trailers and stuff,
but that's
like that.
The thing they're I think that was kind of part of the Nickelback problem too. We were talking about Nickelback before. They just started showing up in like in the time of like collect call commercials. Their music was showing up in places where you're just like, I am sick of these guys. I'm sick of this sound. I'm sick of this band. I don't think Nickelback's great. I know you have a soft spot for them, but
well, I have a respectful spot for them.
Yeah,
because I'll name two bands that are not revival. They have huge fan bases, but also huge detractors. And they're sort of punchlines. Creed.
Yeah.
And Nickelback.
I think Creed's better than Nickelback, though, in my opinion. I think Creed's the couple of Creed songs that I know that were big hits, even though they're a little weird and it's like a weird, to me, it's a little weird, like how front facing religious they are. They, like,
I wish
can
they were
you
religious.
Take me higher rocks?
It feels like, I'm one of those people who's like, give me atheists, give me religious people.
Yeah.
Get your spiritual people out of here.
Yeah, sure.
I'm
sure.
Like,
commit to something.
Commit to something. I'm asking you to commit to something. I'm more of a spiritual energy type.
Yeah.
Well, then you're a person I don't need to talk to.
Right.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
I've often said, libertarians are I'm spiritual, not religious, political group.
Yeah.
But, Creed, yeah, Higher is good. And Creed's like last huge album that I think had My Sacrifice on it, which was which is actually not a song I was a big fan of.
Yeah.
But that album has some tracks on it that really
rock. Yeah. My Sacrifice rocks, I think.
It does, but in a here's our anthem rock type song.
But JL, this is exactly what I was describing with Kiss. Like all of this music to me, and even when we were talking before about Limp Bizkit or whatever,
you said that like you were new to this country. Limp Bizkit. Are you familiar with Nuki? I prefer black stuff. Get out of my fucking face, bro.
like the issue is that they're like, a lot of this music to me is not good.
Right.
But it rocks. And I think that there's something about like the rock aspect of it is like a feeling more than anything.
Sure.
And it's like, it just gets you excited in a way that it's just like, there's a buildup and eventually you're singing, can you take? And it's awesome. Like it's not good, but it's awesome and it rocks. And it's just such a hard thing to explain. Because for a lot of other pieces of music, it's like, when you listen to jazz, a lot of times you're just like, you like it or you don't. You're not affected by it when you don't think it's very good, you know?
My air trumpet is
pretty good.
World class. And it's featured on my new special, Half Blackface. Not afraid of doing shameless promotion.
There you go.
Creed has a song on that My Sacrifice album called Signs.
Yeah.
It was never a single.
Yeah.
It's like there are a couple songs on that album that are so hard.
Yeah.
But they're not like, it's almost like they made that like, but this is like the commercial rock song.
Yeah.
And that's like, bow, wow, bow, wow, wow. Like almost like, what did you like? Listen to Rage Against the Machine and then write a song. Yeah. And, but the thing about Creed and Nickelback, and you talk about it being a feeling and a vibe.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm wondering what that can say, if it can say anything about our society, that rock music, like a music that bridged like black culture, stole from black culture in some ways, but like
shamelessly.
But gave us like country music is still like country music is a whole other topic because I'm not a huge country music fan. And even I'm offended by like bro country.
Oh yeah. That's like bad music.
40% pop, 20% hip hop. Don't tell them that.
Yeah.
Even though they're clearly borrowing like boom, boom, and you're like, what? And then it's like, but I drive a truck and or drink my beer. I go to church and I don't like the queers. And you're like, oh, wow, this is country. But it's like, no, it really isn't. And I'm not trying to rip off Bo Burnham's great bit from like almost a decade ago, but it's not. Like if I were a real country music fan, I'd be like, what is this garbage? Like, what have you done to our respected American art form that told stories from a certain community?
Yeah.
Like country, and Malcolm Gladwell did make this point, country music and rap music share so much similar DNA. And I once said, if country music fans could just admit, I was a poor, my daddy was a poor white farmer, but guess what? Your granddaddy who was lynched, he did have it harder for sure. If you could bridge that one stubborn refusal to acknowledge that in America, there is a people that suffered more than others.
Yeah, yeah.
And if Native Americans showed up with their music and were like, hold the phone, guys. I also have a shirt. Fine.
Yeah.
But this idea of like, well, I never had slaves or my daddy didn't speak the language is like, but they are stories of struggle. Yeah. Like that, the best of both of those genres is like unique, individual, cultural storytelling.
And not to go too far down the country road as a country music fan myself, not really modern country, some guys, but not that Nashville sort of,
not the stuff that's like really the TikTok Matt Rife country music,
like Sturgill Simpson, who's great. He's kind of like
you didn't like that?
Another Matt Rife shot.
Like just a graphic of his face pops up on the video every time I say something. I'm just kidding. It's all love, bro.
Yeah. But I think that the interesting thing about what you were just saying is that a lot of the great classic country artists.
Sorry to interrupt you. Do you like the guy with the beard? What's his name? Stapleton.
Yeah, I don't like him as much as I like Coulter Wall or Sturgill or those guys. But he's good. He's like the best version of sort of like mainstream country.
It's like bluesy rock.
Yeah.
But at least it's not, it doesn't feel.
And he's so hideous that if he wasn't actually talented, the music would never get played. You know, it's that principle in full effect.
Right.
But the thing is, it's like, so do you know the Highwaymen? It was Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, and Waylon Jennings. They were all.
Sure, I watched Ken Burns Country, but yes, that sounds familiar.
So they were a group together and they have this whole song called American Remains. And it's all about, it's taking these different sort of like folk legends of America. And one of them obviously is like a Native American, like these guys, Johnny Cash too, they were very respectful of kind of the plight of specifically Native Americans in this country. And it kind of like the newer version of country, I think, turns people off to what is really an unbelievable art form with people that were so talented, because the newer stuff, it to me is not very good. And you also have these people that are involved in it now that are like very divisive politically,
right?
In a way that kind of shoehorns country music into this, like, well, we're all Trumpers, we're all kind of like, you know, like that guy from, remember that band Stained?
Yeah,
that guy,
Aaron Lewis.
He is now like a big country, like conservative.
Wow,
it's so weird.
He's the white Darius Rucker.
Yeah.
Although Darius Rucker, I shouldn't say that because I don't know that he. I don't think he's.
right,
MAGA or anything.
But he, I'm, as far as I know, that other dude, Aaron Lewis or whatever his name was, I saw him open for Willie Nelson, and yeah, well, he was
it's
like,
"It's been a while since I gave a shit about that guy."
I know.
How about that, Stained?
But I saw Willie Nelson in Coney Island, and Aaron, that guy was doing. He was
that's
opening.
Where you're gonna see Willie Nelson
in Coney Island?
Like, was he just eating a hot dog, or was he performing?
No,
there?
He's performing. They have like a little amphitheater out there.
Okay.
And the guy was opening for him, and he was all in between his songs. He was all just talking about the flag and like all this shit. I was just like, you're in Brooklyn. What are you doing?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
It's pathetic. And it's, but I do think we are seeing rock is like, I'm going to bring this to climate change. We're seeing what the climate is doing right now. And it's giving us, now it's no longer hints. Now it's effects.
Right.
We're no longer getting data. We're getting like real time effects in our communities and with death.
Right.
So we're here and it's not good. But with rock, it's like the death of rock to me. I then look at rap.
Yeah.
And rap, I was like anybody, it was a dominant musical form in the 90s and early 2000s. And I think it peaked. Mm-hmm. And I know there's young people who'll be like, what do you mean? Well, you couldn't have made fun of Biggie or Tupac or Wu-Tang Clan or any of the iconic acts the way I can make fun of like the entire genre of sort of trap and mumble type stuff. Like I can make my nephew, he'll call me a hater, but I can make him laugh when I pretend to be the Migos.
Yeah.
Because I can be like,
and they're the best version of what you're talking
about.
Yes,
they are.
Yeah.
And I will acknowledge that because I have one Migos song on my iPod. But you have an iPod?
There gotta you be go. Stuffer. Yeah. Stir Fry is great. It's great.
But there you go. But and exactly,
yeah,
because I remember I was doing a parody of something, so I downloaded like a bunch of the top artists in that field, and the only one I liked was Stir Fry.
Stir
Fry is
awesome, yeah, great song.
But a lot of their songs, I was like, ugh.
Yes,
but there's no, you can't tell me that a mumbling one verse, 2 minute song becoming like when we saw rap go through the phase, I don't think it's recovered from the phase of. Let's cater to SoundCloud. Like SoundCloud was for rap, what TikTok has become for stand-up, where it's like, we're eventually just going to stop trying to be independent artists and we're just going to get, we're going to do what the platform wants. And we're going to let that be the overarching guideline or guidance for how we make art.
Yeah.
And with rock, it's now seems dead. Foo Fighters are a rock band.
They are. Yeah.
That's without question.
I thought about that before we started, you were saying that Guns N' Roses was like the last. But then I remember
Foo Fighters are an excellent band, but I feel like Guns N' Roses is to me a band that belongs much closer to Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones than maybe most people would put them. I think they were that fucking great. I think they were like for a short time, Sandy.
Well, they
more like a Sandy Koufax kind of career in rock,
like a Comet. Like,
well, you showed up and you put out 5 years of like insane Hall of Fame rock music.
Yeah,
and some people like who don't know, they'll be like, "Oh, like hair metal." I'm like, "No, that's what made them so great."
Right,
they may have looked like hair metal,
right,
but they were all time. They were all time rock.
They are different from these bands for sure. 100%.
And I know somebody could say, no, the Rolling Stones have a longer career, have more hits. I get it. I'm just saying the quality of Guns N' Roses, like Appetite Lies, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 is as good a 5 year, 4 album or 6 year, 4 album run as anybody in rock.
Let me ask you this. Are they better than U2?
Well, I think, if I recall an old conversation, I'm a huge U2 fan, and I don't know that you are.
I hate U2. But I don't really like Guns N' Roses either.
I'm seeing them at Sphere in Vegas in October.
But you like, these are two of your more, you know, closer to your favorite bands.
I'll tell you right now, I'll tell you my 5 favorite albums right now.
Yeah.
That'll tell you a lot. Appetite for Destruction, Ready to Die by Biggie.
Okay.
The Eminem Show by Eminem.
Okay.
Octung Baby, U2.
Okay.
And here's one you might not expect. The Rising by Bruce Springsteen.
The Rising's a great album.
The Rising and the Eminem Show. This is a little insight for the fans, the ones that are still listening. Eminem Show and The Rising. I was very depressed in my second year of law school. And I was in a long-term relationship and we were a year, was that 02, 03? We were a year after 9/11. I was living on my own in DC. I had friends, but I was like in my own apartment, long-term relationship. And two albums came like that I listened to basically for like all of 2002 and 2003. The Eminem Show, which tapped into like the rage I felt sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's the best Eminem album in my opinion, because it was like he was not yet doing like his drug at like his albums where he was an addict.
The Eminem Show is the one with Without Me, right?
Yes.
That's the, yeah.
It's like he is, success and wealth has not changed his lifestyle or fucked him up.
It's the peak.
It's the peak.
Yeah.
And The Rising. And I'm not one of these like, oh, you got to listen to Rosalita or whatever the fuck from the 1970s. Like, you know, I like Badlands. That's probably my favorite old Bruce Springsteen song.
Yeah.
But Thunder Road never spoke to me, really.
Oh,
yeah. No, I get it.
I know, but
Born to Run is fine.
Born to Run is fine, but Thunder Road, man.
But like Badlands for me, I love that. Like, I love that song.
Yeah,
that's like his great oldest song. Yeah. Song that I love.
That's one of my favorite albums. Okay. Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Couldn't have told you what album. It was I have the greatest hits, but The Rising as an album,
yeah,
was so good and like hit me at the right moment. And then Norah Jones beat both Eminem and Bruce Springsteen for album of the year. And I was like, they must have split the vote.
Yeah.
They must have split the fucking vote.
Right, right.
Because one of those should have won, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But those are my five favorite albums. And U2, yeah, I love U2. I think they are.
So what, answer my question.
Yeah.
Is Guns N' Roses better than U2? As a person who, I like Guns N' Roses more than U2. I really don't like U2, but
U2 has, I'll give you another comparison.
Great.
Because you love it when I bring in comedy. Chappelle and Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Chris Rock is my favorite comedian of all time. Chris Rock at his best, in my opinion, untouchable. Bring the pain, black, bigger and blacker. Other than maybe some of the things I've made, nobody can touch those. Half Blackface, everybody check it out. I'm telling you, it's landmark shit. It is landmark shit. I put all my chips on Half Blackface. It's the apex of a 20-year struggle for achievement in comedy.
Yeah.
But I do believe that Chappelle is having the much better long career for so many reasons. The sketch show, but also his style. Before he got into the whole, like, I'm now a libertarian anti-trans warrior giving speeches posed as comedy shows, he had two specials come out in 2015 or 2016 that were phenomenal, and I just felt age was not hurting him, because he always had a kind of a slow Cosby vibe to him that could age well, whereas Chris Rock had a youthful intensity is an important component to the way I do comedy. Words matter, writing matters, but performance also matters. And Chris Rock was like a guy throwing fastballs. And when the fastball leaves, you still have some talent and some know-how and some skills. But Dave Chappelle was Greg Maddux. Like, it doesn't matter.
I'm going to throw 81 for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to throw it past you. And I'm going to win.
Yeah.
Whereas Chris Rock is like, 99 is now 91.
Yeah,
and they're clocking it. U2 is Chappelle to me. I saw them for the first time in concert in 2018. All I kept thinking was, I have no notes, except, boy, I wish I could have seen you guys do the Joshua Tree in 88.
Yeah, right.
Guns N' Roses, boy, I wish I could have seen you in 88, because there's no way you could be as good as you were in 88 because of the type of music and Axl Rose in particular. That said, I did love them in 2016 and was really pleasantly surprised and excited about how good the show was. But when I see U2 in Vegas, I know I'm going to get an A concert.
Yeah.
When I saw Guns N' Roses last night, I got a B.
Yeah.
So at their peak, my point is, at their peak, Guns N' Roses is still my favorite. And I think Appetite for Destruction through Use Your Illusion 2 is just a peak dominant stretch of music. U2, though, I have bought U2 albums from, you know, 1984 to 2000. I don't know. When was the last one? 18? I think 17?
Maybe.
2017?
The one that was on everybody's iPhone?
Well, that was 2014. Okay. And that also spoke to America's stupidity. Well, a great band gave you a free album and we rioted.
Yeah, I mean, It's that is a funny way to look at it, but I mean, I was not happy about it.
Yeah, of course you weren't, and I'm glad you weren't.
It's like, oh, I can't get this shit off of my fucking phone. I hate these guys.
But I think rap and country need to look at rock and realize the death of rock is not a good thing, and you should look at your own music and the paths you're going down now, because both, I think, in the mainstream, because that's how you die. You, when the mainstream sucks, people will stop. The mainstream will stop paying attention.
Yeah.
You can tell me like, no, my friend has a band down at this club and they're really good. Great. Good for them. And we're glad they're keeping. But when the mainstream shit starts really sucking, that's when the rot, you know, and country music with this bro patriotism, glossy shit. And then rap with like so many like just and it all sounds the same. And this isn't. I may be of a different generation, but I'm not somebody who's doesn't own dozens of rap albums. I'm not somebody going, what the hip hop? What?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, but I can tell a difference between a 5-minute, 3-verse, clever song from Ice Cube or Biggie and a 2-minute thing that's just meant to be used on TikTok.
Yeah.
You know, so that death of rock, it's something for all you fans of other music to be very careful about. Now, we're going to take one more very quick break, and I'll come back to you with a couple of quick comedy tidbits because we've gone way over time. This is Rain on Your Parade. Back at you in a minute. Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade for our Mike's least favorite segment and my favorite. It's where I talk about comedy very briefly because we've had an epic episode, which I hope you've enjoyed. And then they turn it off. Comedy recommendation for the week. This is a special I watched a little while ago when I was just trying to catch up on all the YouTube specials I'd seen promoted across platforms. And the one I watched, this particular one, I thought was outstanding, and it's worth you guys checking out if you haven't already. Stavros Halkias. His special is called Live at the Lodge Room. Now, Stavros is one of the best on TikTok of the of the crowd work stuff. But unlike other people, his feels very organic. And when I watched his full special, there's crowd work, but it's not like, okay, guys, let's do a Q&A now.
Yeah.
This is for content. I think he's just a very gifted stand-up comedian. And I have a quick story about Stavros, a personal story. I was opening for Dave Attell in 2012, back-to-back clubs, total coincidence, in Indianapolis, the next week in Washington, D.C. at the Improv. Complete coincidence. But he had Stavros, who was originally a Baltimore comedian, doing a guest spot for him. And I guess he had already seen him. And I guess since they, you know, Dave Attell being a comic, I guess wasn't going to boot somebody off the lineup that already had been given a gig. And it was very fun working with Attell. And Stavros did a guest spot and it went well. I think he just had a good 5-minute set. I don't think it was like, oh my God, you just changed comic. But, you know, but Attell liked him. I never opened for Attell again. I know Stavros did. So Stavros is living my life is what I'm saying. No, but Stavros, his crowd work is organic. It does not feel forced. It does not feel content driven, or at least primarily driven by the need for content. And his special is really good. And it didn't feel like younger comic, and he's blowing up. Who the fuck needs it? He's like selling out the Beacon and shit. But he still is a guy who's like, at the time of the special, probably 31. I think it was his first special, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he's in his 30s. Stavi's somewhere in his 30s.
I think I heard him say 32 in a clip. Yeah. So I'm just taking off a year for the special. But like, okay, early 30s.
Looks but like, 65, but yeah. Yes.
But he has like an infectious laugh that doesn't feel like a gimmick. Yeah. Everything about him, it's like, I'm going to say something very complimentary. It's the best of what stand-up can be that someone could think are gimmicks. His laugh, he's either so good or it's organic. He's either so good I don't know that it's a gimmick, or it's like he's having fun.
No, he's a super, right? He's a super authentic guy. Right. A very lovely guy too. I knew him when I was still doing stand up and he first came to New York mm-hmm. when he was kind of new on the scene. He was awesome. He's just a cool guy.
And when he came to New York, he said to you, yeah, this guy did a feature spot at the Improv, but I'm pretty sure Attell's going to fucking bump him and I'm the guy now. But it's all the things, like the best things I can say about comedy are when I watch and I'm no longer feeling like I'm a comedian analyzing comedy. Like, yeah, that's a good one. I think his, you know, Bo Burnham's Inside to me is the gold standard for the last 10 years. Is like, I just watched it in amazement and enjoyment. I didn't go, wow, he's good.
Yeah.
He's good. I was just like, this guy's taking me out of my zone.
He does that rare thing that a lot of comedians kind of can't do, where he's like, you just want to hang out with him. He's the funniest guy. Like, if you had a job at UPS or Banana yeah. Republic or something, you'd be the funniest guy at work. And be like, I'm working with Stavros.
Do I work there also?
You guys have a different vibe. You're, you know... You're more like comedy dad, you know?
Oh, God! Well, now I'm going to be comedy suicide victim after being called comedy dad. Oh, my God. I'm done. I'm retired. No.
It's a compliment.
No, but, you know, Stavros is like, in The Office, he'd be like, I don't know how to make this sound like I'd be complimenting myself. No, the point is, guys, before Mike derailed me, made me sound like an asshole, I enjoyed the comedy. Like, it's funny. Everything about it feels authentic, even though he's so good at the things that work in terms of crowd work, content, funny look, all this. But it's just who he is. And there's material. It's not like he's... And there was a maturity to the set. I don't mean maturity like I'm talking about serious things, but there was a maturity to his stand-up skills. You know what I mean? That I was like, man, this was good. This was really good and really fun. So Stavros Halkias, if you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. It's free, live at the Lodge Room. And then we end always on a positive note, the punchdown of the week. This is where fans try to help me with comedy, whether it's a tag or a suggestion or a thing I must do, or no, actually, you know, you love those. Actually, yeah. It would probably be. And, you know, my common response is always like, that's why you follow me and I don't follow you. And they often rectify that. And then by the end of that exchange, neither of us is following the other. But I say,
end of the relationship.
Trim the fat. Thin the herd, trim the fat. That's what I'm about. I want to go into comedy clubs like Leonidas with an army of 300. I don't need a Persian army of passive social media fans. I want to kick a club manager in the chest and say, this is Covan.
Yeah.
And then have my elderly legion run in there and buy drinks. Anyway, the punchdown of the week, this is the last time I do this, but it's another general one because I got it too many times to just pick on one person. But my Ron DeSantis impression, which has done very well for me on TikTok and YouTube, people want me to do more hands. And I do some hands. But I don't do it enough. I don't do it exaggerate enough. And they want me to bob my head like, you know, how he does this and he looks at people and says, no, I'm like kind of a bobblehead, but I don't do it enough. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the many people who've asked me to do impressions for shows for things I haven't gotten. They've wanted voiceovers and they go, oh, my nephew walked in and thought that it was actually that person talking. Can you do it bigger and sillier? At which point I go, good day, ma'am. Good day, sir. You can keep your check. No, I don't say that. I just say that in my head.
Yeah.
But then I never, you know, I go for authenticity. I go for, that's the skill. The skill is not being a cartoon for me.
Yeah.
If you want a cartoon, there's a lot of hacks who do cartoonish impressions. You want the real deal? You want the crumbs cupcake of impressions? You come to me. One day when I'm dead, Mike will go, I never appreciated how he really tied everything together. Like, just lyrical poetry in the form of giant comedy. But all the people who've been telling me I need to do more head bobbing and more hand movement, no, you need to look for that less. I'm giving you good product. You can have a Crumbs cupcake, or you can have just a mouthful of Fruit Loops. Okay. If you want Fruit Loops, go get that. Toucan Sam will pour some comedy bullshit down your throat. But if you want the goods, leave me be. As Colonel Nathan Jessup said in A Few Good Men, I would just rather have you say thank you and be on your way. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you're entitled to.
Nice.
And that's it for this week. So thank you for listening to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I am J.L. That's been Mike. Don't say anything. And we'll talk to you next week. You can say something if you want.
Bye.